From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. On September 29th, 1964, Ohio's governor and two automotive executives knelt before a plunger box and together pushed the trigger to dynamite farmland behind them. It was the groundbreaking ceremony for GM's so-called Lucky 13th manufacturing plant, then the largest car assembly plant in the world. At its peak, workers at the Lordstown, Ohio plant pushed more than 100 cars off the assembly line every hour. But yesterday, the very last Chevy Cruze rolled off the line, and with it, the last 1,700 jobs at the plant. Many more in the surrounding community are at risk. So where dynamite was once used to break ground on the future, there's now an economic crater in Lordstown. The GM closure highlights a growing divide in the U.S. Manufacturing jobs are actually on the rise elsewhere in the country. But why is that rebound not happening everywhere? And how can we close that gap? So this hour on Point, lost jobs in Lordstown and strengthening manufacturing everywhere. And you can join us. Why is there such regional disparity in manufacturing jobs? Have you seen good work grow or fall away in your community? And how can we better transition all workers to the manufacturing jobs of the future? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, we'll start today in Youngstown, Ohio. Glenn Stevens joins us. He's Special Projects Director and reporter for WFMJ Television, an NBC affiliate there. His station produced a 90-minute special that aired last night looking at the Lordstown manufacturing facility's history, its future, and how the community is going to move forward without those GM jobs. And by the way, Glenn has covered the Lordstown assembly plant since he joined WFMJ in 1971. Glenn Stevens, welcome to On Point.
Hi, glad to be with you. Thanks for including me.
So first of all, Glenn, I wonder if you could give us a sense as to, how the community is feeling today now that the plant is officially closed.
Well, what I'm hearing mostly, I mean, we talked to several workers as they were leaving the plant yesterday for the last time probably, and what we were hearing mostly was disappointment and being let down. This plant and these workers have given so much back to General Motors through the auto rescue phase, gave them a quality car, and they just feel this is the way they're being repaid.
Mm. Well, let's listen to some of the people that you did talk with. This is a scene from the documentary you produced. Some employees here from the now closed GM Lordstown plant as they left the facility on their last day of work.
We believed in this company. We gave it everything that we could possibly give this company. And we just feel so let down.
We're leaving our family. We're leaving our friends. And we're leaving everything that we have with the last carrier that goes down.
Glenn Stevens, the loss of a manufacturing facility in any community is always a big one. But how central was this GM plant to life and livelihoods in Lordstown for 45 years?
This was a major driver in the local economy. Last year alone, it contributed $250 million in income taxes. People would just not fathom this plant ever going away. We've had generations that have worked there. And the other thing that you have to consider is that while you talk about the 1,500 that were finally left there and let go, you mentioned this is so widespread, the impact goes far beyond the walls of the plant. It goes down to the supply chain. The company here that made the seats for the crews had to let people go. The trucking company that transported the cars out of the plant had to let people go. And then you look at the coffee shop, the sandwich shop that all the workers used to stop at, the sports bar where they all used to go and watch their favorite teams. All of those secondary employers and businesses are going to be impacted. The barbershop, the beauty shops, everybody is feeling the impact of losing this major driver. Everybody would want a car manufacturing plant in their community. It creates jobs. It creates taxes. It creates wealth, and when that goes away, it's devastating.
Mm. And yet some of the workers there are holding on to hope that GM might reopen the plant here. I want to play another bit of tape from your documentary yesterday. This is Brenda Grooms, who until yesterday had a job at the Lordstown plant, but she's not ready to believe that her days working for GM are over.
I just believe that we're going to eventually get another car, or something has to come to this area. Something's going to come.
Glenn Stevens, why are people like Brenda Grooms holding on to that hope?
Well, because we went through this once before. When they decided to end production of the Cavalier, it was then, will we get a new product? And they launched a big campaign called Bring It Home. Well, right now, there's another big campaign going on locally called Drive It Home. You see signs everywhere. Children in schools have been writing letters to Mary Barra. And tomorrow is Blue Friday. Blue is the color they've chosen for the theme, and children in schools throughout the valley are going to be wearing blue. And they just feel that they just aren't ready to accept that Lordstown is going to turn their back on them, and that they're finally going to be able to tap into possibly the electrification future of Lordstown with GM. They're just holding on to that hope because they've been through it before, and this plant has been such an iconic employer in this valley for so long. They just really have a hard time accepting that it's going away.
Right. So we mentioned Mary Barra there, the CEO of GM, and you're exactly right. GM has said that they're turning their attention to SUVs, trucks, and electric vehicles. Has Mary Barra said anything about, you know, is there a future for electric car production in Lordstown? And if so, when might they make that decision?
Well, that's what everybody here is waiting for. That's what Governor Mike DeWine is waiting for. That's what the Regional Chamber of Commerce is waiting for. When are they going to let them know or reveal what's next for Lordstown? They feel that the Lordstown plant has the capability of making any type of car that General Motors would come out with. The other thing is, though, that right now, EV and hybrids only represent about 1% of car sales. And they're not sure that how long it's going to be before the car driving public is going to be ready to embrace that electric future. So there's just not very much hope that Lordstown is going to be included in that right now. The big factor, of course, is that the national contract with the United Auto Workers, bargaining will begin this summer, and their contract expires in September. And a breakthrough contract, they feel, is the only thing that can save Lordstown and bring a new product here.
Yeah. So, Glenn, just out of curiosity, you've covered this assembly plant since 1971 when you joined WFMJ. Did you have any family members or folks that you personally knew who worked there?
Oh, I have many friends that have worked at GM Lordstown. I'm president of a local car club, and so many of the guys that are in the car club and the girls as well are GM retirees. I've been to the plant many, many, many times for new product launches and through the big strike in 1972. So not personally, I haven't had anyone from my family work there, but just so many friends that I worked with.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, the centrality of that of the plant for people's livelihoods reaches into many, many families and friends, as you're saying. But Glenn, stand by here for just a second because I want to bring in to the conversation Crystal Keaton. She's joining us from Lucasville, Ohio. She's business manager for Ohio's Workforce Development Board, Area 1, and a manager of the Lordstown Transition Center, which opened at the local United Auto Workers Hall to help serve those GM workers, contractors, and spouses who have felt the impact of the Lordstown plant closure. So, Crystal Keaton, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me and let me join you.
Yeah, so can you tell us a little bit about what kinds of supports are in place or available for workers who are now looking for new jobs?
Currently in our center, they can come in and look for reemployment. We can help them with resume building as well, interview skills. A lot of them have skills that they don't know how to put into a resume because they were specifically to the plant. And so we're helping them to reword those so they can get out into the new private market as well. We're also helping them with free training through Dislocated Worker Dollars and the WIOA program, which is the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, and as well the Trade Act. So we're trying to, you know, wrap around them as many sources as we can for training and reemployment.
So the Trade Act, meaning the Trade Adjustment Assistance Program?
Yes.
Okay. And so that is a federal government program that would cover costs for up to 2 years of classes to retrain in a different field?
Correct.
Okay. And are a lot of folks pursuing that? Are they interested in that? Or is it not realistic for where they are in their lives?
Well, currently, back in June of 2018, we had about 1,500 people who were laid off from the GM Lordstown plant. A good portion of them have began trade services and reemployment. Some of them that had to hold off on that. We're looking at about 133 workers who were planned to start training back in January of 2019, but had to hold off on that due to being recalled back to the plant for a short period of time. So we anticipate those 133 members will go on back to training as soon as training up opens up again for them. And we're still waiting to hear back from the Department of Labor about the layoffs that occurred this week, if they will also be eligible for the Trade Act. We anticipate that. We just have not got the, notification back.
I see that. So Crystal, let me ask you. I mean, you can offer various supports and programs for laid-off workers, but where are the jobs for them to go into or to apply to? Are there places, industries in the region that are realistic for them, that are within a reasonable driving distance, or is there not enough work in the Lordstown-Youngstown area?
Well, we're talking about up to 4,000 people who have been displaced over the last 18 months. So in November of 2017, there was about 1,500 that were laid off, again in June 2018, and now here just yesterday. So that's a really hard for one community, especially the Youngstown area, to absorb that many workers into their workforce with open jobs. So we are reaching out to in the commuting pattern to try to find them jobs that they can commute to. We've had companies contact us about recruitment, and we're also offering a career fair here on March 20th. But we're also looking to retrain them in fields that will be more, the new economy of the future for
right.
them.
So Crystal, stand by here for a second, and Glenn Stevens, hang on. We have to take a quick break. We're talking about the closing of a GM plant in Lordstown, Ohio, and what it says about differing areas of the country and the growth of manufacturing jobs and the loss of those jobs. Why is it divergent from place to place in America? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the closure of a GM auto manufacturing plant in Lordstown, Ohio. More than 1,500 people lost their jobs there yesterday. Many thousands more are at risk in the surrounding communities. And the big question is why and how did this happen at a time where manufacturing jobs elsewhere in the nation are actually on the rise, and how to bridge the gap in those regional differences in terms of where good manufacturing jobs are going now in America? And I'm joined today by Glenn Stevens. He's Special Projects Director and reporter for WFMJ Television. He's with us from Youngstown, Ohio. Crystal Keaton also joins us. She's in Lucasville, Ohio today. She is a manager at the Lordstown Transition Center, which opened at the local UAW Workers Hall to help serve workers at the GM plant who now are out of a job. And Glenn, let's just listen to a little bit more of the documentary that you produced about the closing of the Lordstown Assembly plant. This is Lisa Miller, who you spoke to. She's a waitress at Nice County Cafe in Lordstown.
There's not a lot in Lordstown. It's a quiet little community. There's not even a grocery store. So if you don't live here or you don't work here, you don't come here.
Glenn Stevens, before the break, you heard Crystal Keaton talking about that it's hard for one community to absorb all the job losses that you're seeing now, and how Crystal said, groups and officials are looking to surrounding communities to help support the workers who are out of work there. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, about whether or not surrounding communities are able to do that?
Well, I'm sure that, yes, everybody is trying to step up and help. And I think the Transition Center at Lordstown has been just a real lifesaver for some of the workers. They're trying to reinvent themselves. But I wanted to point out, and Crystal may be aware of this, other businesses are stepping up. There's a realtor here that's offering to pay for real estate training for any Lordstown-affected worker to get their realtor's license, and they will hire them. Also, Eastern Gateway Community College is offering free tuition to anyone impacted by the Lordstown closing. That's the Lordstown workers, supply chain companies, family members. They're offering free tuition for them to go to Eastern Gateway Community College and try to achieve either new training or an associate's degree. So a lot of companies are stepping up. But as far as other widespread manufacturing, there is a group here in the Valley, Manufacturers Association. They got together several years ago, and that was their main focus, is to bring more young people and bring retrain and bring people that have lost jobs into manufacturing. Because, as you know, manufacturing today is not the dirty, dangerous place it used to be. And that's what they're trying to reach out to these people and let them know that there are jobs here, and they're offering to give them training.
So there are jobs there, because that's what I was wondering. Like, there's not going to be a GM-sized plant, I gather, but are there sort of smaller businesses or smaller industries that are looking for skilled workers like this?
Yeah, there's, of course, with oil and gas that's going on in the shale boom, it's not as big as they anticipated. But welders, I mean, they're looking for welders everywhere. They're looking for people that can go out and work on site. So it's just a matter of getting that training. What they did with the Mahoning County and Trumbull County and Columbiana County training centers, they actually brought in manufacturers and said, look, we want to teach what you need. Who are you looking to hire? That's what we want to teach. We want to teach to what you want. And so that's been a big step forward.
Right. So, Crystal Keaton, I know I've got to let you go here in just a minute, but what more do workers need to help help them through this transition, as you were talking about, to the kinds of jobs that we're seeing in the new economy? Are there enough resources for them out there, or do you think does state and federal government need to step up more? And if so, how?
Well, state and federal government has been providing lots of resources for these workers. We've been on the ground since November providing services to them and trying to get them enrolled into training and other reemployment tools. Reemployment and retraining is probably the best goal for them, is getting retrained into advanced manufacturing fields. So like Eastern Gateway assisting them with education as well as the other CTCs or community colleges, that's a really good option for them.
Hmm. Well, Crystal Keaton joining us today from Lucasville, Ohio. She's business manager for Ohio's Workforce Development Board, Area 1, and managing the Lordstown Transition Center as well. Thank you so much for joining us, Crystal.
Thanks for having us. Have a nice day.
Okay, so let's go to the phones here quickly. Let's go to Anthony, who's calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. Anthony, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a former General Motors employee. We had an assembly plant in Framingham, Massachusetts that closed in 1989. I had two small children and really didn't know what to do for the first year. We have a very diverse economy here in Massachusetts. I went back to school. I went to Northeastern University and entered the medical profession, which I just recently retired from. But I can tell you, I tried to exhaust every possibility there was. Retail didn't work. Sales didn't work. I just had to re-educate myself. Fortunately, I had a home to remortgage.
Uh-huh.
That hurt to do that, but at least I was able to re-enter the economy. So I think people have to be very creative in what they try to retrain for.
Right, and as long as... Anthony, I was going to say, as long as there's the jobs there to retrain into, right?
Yes, no, we're lucky here in Massachusetts. Things are very good here, and there's a lot of opportunity. But I don't know the Rust Belt or, you know, where these plants are closing, especially in Michigan. I have no idea what those poor folks are going to do.
Right. Well, Anthony, let me take it back from you, and thank you so much for your call. I want to bring into the conversation now Heather Long. She's joining us from Washington. She's economics correspondent for The Washington Post. She's written extensively about Lordstown and the GM plant there, most recently An article headlined "From $22 an hour to $11, GM cuts in Ohio show a hot economy is still leaving parts of America behind." And we have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Heather, welcome to the program.
Hi, good to be here.
So first of all, we're going to get to the big picture here about why there are such regional differences in terms of the growth of manufacturing jobs. But tell us a little bit about the people that you've talked to in Lordstown who, if not this time around, in the previous layoffs that GM has done there, what challenges did they face in trying to retrain for new jobs?
Yeah, I haven't been in that area as long as Glenn, but I did make my first trip to Lordstown in early 2017. The plant has laid off three shifts, and I have kept in touch with a lot of those workers that I met who were laid off in the first shift and then in the second shift last summer, because I was wondering, what are they going to do? They really have three options. They can try to look for another job, and while there are jobs available in that area, GM was paying people close $60,000 to $70,000 a year. A lot of people at the plant were earning $20 to $30 an hour, and the jobs that are on offer in that area are more like $10, sort of $8 to $12 an hour jobs. I was driving around, I saw Sheetz was advertising $10 an hour jobs. So they can look for another job, they can try to retrain, and these workers are offered the marquee government program, that trade adjustment assistance, which pays for up to 2 years of schooling, plus giving them a stipend to go to school. But, you know, a lot of these workers haven't been able, you know, haven't been in school for a long time. And then the third option is to potentially transfer to another GM plant. Mm-hmm. But of course, that means uprooting and moving to usually another state. A lot of workers have decided to go to Missouri or to Michigan or to Texas. So some of these places are farther than a day's drive away from home and from family members. People have kids in school. They don't want to uproot. So these are not easy decisions. Yeah. And, you know,
well, can I just jump in here? Because in your reporting, you say that about that marquee federal retraining program, only about 30% of folks who've lost their jobs in recent years from those GM closures have enrolled in that program. And you've talked to some folks who tried it but found it challenging because, as you said, like it's not like they're just jumping back into the economy from where they first entered the job market, right? Like what they're retraining for is quite different from the jobs that they may have done for decades.
That's right, Meghna. Honestly, there's a huge difference between if somebody is laid off before age 45 versus after. And the folks that I met who were laid off in their 20s and 30s, they usually jumped into retraining. One of them, for instance, is now a nurse. She's about ready to graduate from a two-year RN program. In some ways, this was great for her. She got free education to go into a hot field. But other folks I met, like a guy named Mike Beinock, he's 58. He had a college degree. He earned that in the early 1980s, but he hasn't been in a classroom in decades. And he said, look, I took the government's advice. I enrolled in this trade adjustment assistance program. I showed up for the first week of classes to be a CNC machinist, which is our advanced manufacturing type degree. And he said, I couldn't make it. I dropped out after the first week. The first day of class, the professor says, okay, let's get going. I turn on the computer, put in the flash drive, and he says, you know, I had to ask the guy next to me, what's a flash drive? I just didn't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go back to the phones here briefly. Let's go to Tushar, who's calling from Dayton, Ohio. Tushar, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. So, as you said, I'm from Dayton, Ohio, which is similar to the environment in Lordstown, but a number of years ago, we also had a GM plant that didn't make cars. They made parts for the cars, but that closed down. There was a GE plant there. There was National Couch Register. The point is, Dayton was like a really big manufacturing town for Ohio. And as the years went by, all of those plants closed. And now unemployment in my city is sky high, which brings the entire question back to why is there such poor city planning in a lot of these areas where the bulk of the employment, or the skilled employment rather, is carried out by one employer? Shouldn't they diversify these markets so there's more employers on the line? And then the second point I wanted to make was the main reason why there's so much struggle, like your panelist was saying, is that these folks haven't been in a classroom for so long, but when their lives are literally on the line, their livelihoods, their families are on the line, why is there such a large aversion to risk, to, you know, sticking it through for, instead of that week, going for a full semester, going for a full year, taking advantage of all of the assistance that is provided to them in order to better their lives.
Yeah, so Tushar, let me just jump in here. I'm going to push back on you with all due respect. And it's easy to look back with 2020 vision and say, hey, how come these communities didn't diversify? But for 45 years, the present was very good for them. I mean, Heather and Glenn have been talking about jobs that were paying $60,000 to $70,000 a year for people. And I, you know, look, we should all be thinking more about the future. But I think, I don't know, I have a little bit of understanding for civic leaders who, in the middle of a healthy economy, don't necessarily say, we have to prepare for an uncertain future. I mean, it makes a lot of sense that that happened in the past.
I can see, like, some of the perspectives you're laying out, but ironically, there's a quote by Eisenhower saying that what's good for GM is good for the country. And that was 50 years ago, right? So why are we sticking to policies that, you know, were great 50 years ago, but with automation coming in the way it has, with technology developing the way it has, there's no point in sticking to a job that was defined in an era where the technology that is being used to create the next generation of products is already obsolete.
So what's GM's responsibility here, though, Tushar? They're the ones who've just packing up and leaving. Maybe the corporations ought to do better in training their workforce for future jobs. What do you think?
Well, I mean, yes, corporate responsibility is a pretty big issue here, but at the end of the day, it's not the corporation's responsibility to take care of the citizens, right? It's the city government's job to make sure that they have the right infrastructure in place to live a successful life in their city. And that goes more into a political discussion about what budget priorities are to create these programs to serve the citizens.
Well, Tushar, thank you so much for your call. Glenn Stevens, let me turn back to you there. I mean, you've been covering the Lordstown Assembly Plant since 1971. What do you make of Tushar's assertion that laid-off workers ought to be less risk-averse and just stick it out in the through the tough times of job retraining?
Well, yeah, but it's a new thing for so many of them, like you said, the ones that have not been in the classroom for so many years. But I want to make one other point, if I could, quickly. The other thing that the union and the auto workers and the community here, they're saying, you know, what is the responsibility of General Motors on this? They went to the wall for General Motors when they were going through the auto rescue. And then on the day, the very day that they announced they were going to lay off the third shift at Lordstown, the very day they did that, they announced that they were opening a new plant to build the Chevy Blazer in Mexico.
Right.
That's what they want to know. I mean, this plant is 6.2 million square feet. It has its own gate to the turnpike. It's on Interstate 80. It has rail service. It has suppliers that were right on the same road that they were on, so there was very little transportation to get the parts to the plant. So they're saying, this plant has everything you want. Why can't you build something new here?
Well, on that point, Glenn, we have a little bit of tape here from Dave Green, the president of United Auto Workers Local 1112. They represent workers at Lordstown. And he told you at WFMJ that workers are looking to those contract negotiations that you talked about a little earlier coming up this summer to see what their options are. But Dave Green is also still worried about the company pitting plants against each other.
We call it whipsawing. Has been a struggle. For us across the nation, right? Because once one plant gives up so much work, agrees to so much outsourcing, then the next plant's going to be expected to do it. I don't know that we're, you know, our members are really excited about making any more concessions.
That's Dave Green, president of United Auto Workers Local 1112 here. Now, Heather Long, the thing that I want to get to you, mine your expertise on here, is this bigger notion that we're trying to understand about why the trajectory of manufacturing jobs seems so different in different parts of the country. I mean, in your reporting, you found that manufacturing jobs are actually up in 75% of metro areas across the country. What are the differences in those metro areas versus the ones where manufacturing jobs are ebbing away?
Yeah, it's a huge question and a very good one. Again, just to give some bigger context, from 2000 to 2010, the United States lost just around 6 million manufacturing jobs. So that's the pain that caller was talking about in places like Dayton, Ohio. Since that 2010 mark, so just after the Great Recession, we have actually added back almost 1.5 million manufacturing jobs. And President Trump likes to tout his record. Last year was the best since 1997.
Well, so Heather, stand by, and Glenn, hang on there as well. We do have to take a quick break, but we'll explore this question more when we come back. We're talking about the closure of the GM assembly plant in Lordstown, Ohio, the massive job losses there, but also this bigger question about why manufacturing is doing well in certain places in America and not in others, and a tale of two economies and how to bridge those. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about yesterday's closure of a GM manufacturing plant in Lordstown, Ohio, and what that says about divergent realities when it comes to manufacturing jobs across the United States. Let's listen to what President Trump said at a campaign rally in Youngstown, Ohio, in July of 2017. He talked a lot about manufacturing, and he promised those jobs would return to places like Northeast Ohio.
I rode through your beautiful roads coming up from the airport, and I was looking at some of those big, once incredible job-producing factories, and my wife, Melania, said, "What happened?" I said, "Those jobs have left Ohio. They're all coming back. They're all coming back. Coming back. Don't move. Don't sell your house."
President Donald Trump at a rally in Youngstown, Ohio, July 2017. Now, the fact is that manufacturing jobs have risen, more than 400,000 added since the president took office. But the issue is they haven't been added everywhere, and especially in places like northeastern Ohio. So let's go to Frank, who's calling from Warren, Ohio. Frank, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for playing Donald Trump. Look, right now we're conducting letter campaigns. We're having our children write letters to Mary Barra. Please don't leave. We're wearing blue. We're having rallies. We're making signs. I want to know, did Mary Barra and her children write letters to George W. Bush and Barack Obama to get bailed out so many years ago so that they wouldn't go bankrupt and maybe she wouldn't lose her job? No, I don't think so. They took that and they kept this plant going. And now here it is several years later, and they're leaving us. Mm. Well, you know, I want to know, when you had a caller that talked about corporate responsibility. Well, I'm telling you, these people are singing God Bless America in a different key than the rest of us are. And, all these facts and figures about manufacturing jobs, you know, showing up here and there. Well, this plant's going to Mexico for a great deal. So, yeah, let's build a wall to prevent our good corporate citizens from going to Mexico.
Frank, I'm going to take it back from you there, but thank you so very much for your call. Let's get a call here in from David, who's calling from Detroit, Michigan. David, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Go ahead, David.
So we just had a similar announcement of the GM Pulltown plant, which is in Detroit and part of Hamtramck. And I'm also an auto worker myself, and we're going to be facing contract negotiations at the end of the year. And, you know, the general trajectory of the manufacturing and really the whole economy is towards, you know, lower wage, more temporary work, different tiers of work, eliminating, you know, benefits and ways of, you know, retiring. And these plants, when they get built, they chase tax breaks. They tear up neighborhoods. They pollute the environment around where they're built. They expect handouts from the government to build these plants. They expect tax breaks. They expect handouts in the form of help to clean up the brownfields they make.
Yep.
Yet they feel like they can pick up and leave. And it's not a case of them not being profitable. It's just that they're not making enough money.
Right.
And I think they've gotten used to working people just tolerating it. And I think at some point it's a decision we as working people have to make and what we're willing to tolerate.
Right.
And if we are not willing to tolerate this, then we have to strike. And we have to remind them that there used to be a time when auto feared working people. And they need to do so again, because it's whether it's the politicians that serve them or whether it's the CEOs and stockholders, they feel like this is their country, not ours. And
well,
we need to remind them.
Yeah. And David, thank you so much for your call. Glenn Stevens with WFMJ there in Youngstown, Ohio. Just want to know what your thoughts and reactions are to those two callers we just heard.
Well, I think that's some of the feeling that you get because so many people have been impacted by the auto industry. You look at Dayton, you look at Detroit. There's been so many communities that have been impacted by decisions made by automakers, and they're right. They feel like when they went through the auto rescue, everything that was done there to pull General Motors back out of bankruptcy, and then the Lordstown workers that produced a quality car. I mean, even the auto reviewers and the auto industry analysts will say that the Cruze is a great little car. But what they say is they have never seen a shift in market like this.
Uh-huh.
People have just walked away from passenger cars. For the past 10 years, there's been this shift toward the SUV and the crossover, and that is dominating the market. And people, I mean, last month alone, passenger car sales were down 44,000 units. The year before, 140,000. So they say they just have to respond to what the market is demanding. And unfortunately, the Cruze was a victim of that. And so the workers just feel like, what can I do?
Right.
I'm making the best possible car I can make.
Well,
what can I do?
So Heather Long, on that point, let me turn back to you here, because I'm still very fascinated in trying to understand why in places like the Rust Belt or parts of the Northeast, we're seeing this continuing sort of draining away of manufacturing jobs. But as you've shown in your reporting, the West Coast or what's known as Auto Alley, I mean, there are places where jobs are being added. What are the industries in which they're growing, and why are they located regionally where they are?
It's interesting. As you mentioned, the auto industry actually is growing, particularly in the Carolinas, and it's resurging in parts of Michigan as well. Some people make the argument similar to that second caller that there's less unionization in the South, and so the wages and the pay are lower, and so that's why auto industries and other factories have been shifting there as opposed to being in states and in places that have a larger culture of unionization. Is that fair? Is it right? I don't know, but that's what's happening as a business decision. The other thing really goes to the skills picture. Why is the West Coast of all places? I mean, California is expensive. Everybody agrees on that. How in the heck are they getting those manufacturing jobs? There, it's really a story of what you call advanced manufacturing. And that goes back to what I was trying to talk about with that 58-year-old who was trying to get a degree in a CNC machinist. So that's literally someone someone who can do a little bit of programming to set up and run a big, huge, heavy equipment piece that would manufacture parts by itself. It's almost like a 3D printer, basically being able to run an industrial 3D printer. But, you know, not everybody knows how to do that. And so can you retrain those workers who are in those older Rust Belt towns? I'm from PA, Western PA, Eastern Ohio, Northern Upstate New York, and Massachusetts and Connecticut. Those blue-collar workers, can they be retrained? And is the money there to retool those factories?
Wow. Well, let's go to Bob, who's calling from Lincoln, Nebraska. Bob, have you had experience in retraining for a new industry?
Actually, I have. It was probably about 10 years ago. I worked for Goodyear in Lincoln, Nebraska. I had been there for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you know, there was the whole NAFTA thing that was taking off. And they started closing parts of that plant down and sending jobs off to Mexico. They built a new plant in Mexico and started moving things out. And so I went into that program, and I chose to leave early before I lost my job. And, you know, I did exactly what you guys were talking about earlier, which was I just didn't have a choice. I had a family, and there was no way I could make that kind of money anywhere else. And so I went into the program. I finished. I went through, and I became a respiratory therapist. But, you know, I probably make less now than I did then because of the benefits package that those large companies offer.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for your call. So Heather Long, respond to that, because I think this is one of the things that in your reporting, you also talk to a lot of people who, if not directly experiencing this yet, are concerned about it, that even after they retrain, given what the new job market is and the new realities of work in America, that they're still not going to achieve the level of living and an income that they had before.
You're right. That's the biggest fear, is that the middle class life is over there for a lot of people. And, you know, healthcare is very much on people's minds. Some of the folks I spoke to, I'm sure Glenn has as well, who were laid off in the early rounds from that GM Lordstown plant, were showing me their healthcare bills and that their costs went from, they used to have one of the premium plans at GM where they paid almost nothing for healthcare. And now, you know, their costs are several hundred dollars a month at a time when they're looking for a job that's going to pay less. There is some effort in that area. An earlier caller talked about why doesn't the city do more, the town do more to try to bring other industries. I was out there last summer because the trucking industry has become a big hub in that area. The Ohio Turnpike goes right by that plant. And actually a TJ Maxx is opening a big warehouse facility. So a lot of warehouses and shipping companies. But of course, those jobs are more like $50,000 or even less. If you're a warehouse worker, more like $30,000 a year jobs.
Right. So Heather, let me ask you something about how the places that aren't seeing the manufacturing rebound, how they might get a leg up. Because I am concerned, like, is there already such a vast imbalance between these booming metro areas that are sucking up all the manufacturing jobs because of, you know, the access to education, it's easier to maybe boost digital skills there. They have perhaps greater access to capital. There's sort of a proximity effect that these bigger metro areas already have, that it's just going to be really, really hard for other regions to catch up. Is that a concern?
It's a huge concern. Meghna, you've been talking about two economies. Frankly, I talk about three economies in America. Yes, we have these high-skilled jobs in the Silicon Valleys and New York Cities of the world and Boston's of the world. You know, then we have the mid to lower-skilled jobs that are in close to those urban areas. And so, yes, they aren't paying super well, but maybe their kids have a chance to get into programs or training that might elevate them to the high-tech industries that are happening in those cities. But then there's that third America, and that's really in evidence in that Youngstown, Warren, Lordstown area in Ohio, Eastern Ohio and Western PA. And you're right, those people, the jobs aren't there anymore, and also they're just not close. They're not close to the top skills. They're not close to the top retraining programs that And that's, I don't know how we change that. There's a huge debate in America between, do we need to just pump a lot of money into those cities? Is that a government function? Or do we need to move those people, you know, to Pittsburgh or to Cleveland or to other places?
Right. Glenn Stevens, you're there in Youngstown, Ohio. I mean, what do you think from your decades of reporting on this? What do you think the region might need in order to get that leg up?
Well, I can tell you that the local government here and the regional chamber of commerce is just a very active group, and you talk to them any day of the week, and the number one thing at the top of their list is economic development. That is what they are focused on, and that's what they're doing. They're trying to market the area. Not long ago, Congressman Tim Ryan from here, on two occasions, he has brought in venture capitalists from the West Coast, and they've spent 2 days in Youngstown exploring the city, exploring the opportunities here, looking at the work ethic. So there's efforts going on all the time to try to promote that economic development, to attract new jobs, to attract new industries to the area, and to offer those incentives because, again, when it comes to businesses looking to locate, expand, that's the first thing they want. They want the incentives. They want the tax abatements. But the chamber and local lawmakers here are willing to work with those people to try and bring those jobs here. And the Manufacturers Association here, they're saying that the focus was for so long was on that four-year college degree.
Mm-hmm.
What they're saying is don't be afraid of manufacturing. They bring in classes. They bring in, they do shadow job shadowing with those college students, and they take them in and they let them spend the day in a manufacturing facility. Like I said before, it's not the dark, dangerous place it used to be. The CNC machines that Heather was talking about, you go into some of these manufacturing facilities here, and they look like clean rooms.
Right.
So they're just saying, don't be afraid of it.
Did anything come of those visits from those venture capitalists, though?
There has been a couple of deals come through. Congressman Ryan has updated us on those, and I can't recall all the details right now, but I talked to several of those people, and they said that I'm going back to San Francisco, and I'm going to figure out how I can do something in the Mahoning Valley.
Interesting. Well, Heather Long, we've got about a minute and a half left here. I just wondering what your final thought is for today, since you've been reporting on this so long. It is a little... I don't want to say depressing, but I hear you saying that it's not an easy answer in terms of how to help raise up these communities that have a lot of good people who want to do good work, but perhaps because of structural impediments, it's going to be hard for them to make this transition.
I think my final thought would be pivoting off what Glenn just said. I have spoken to two CEOs recently who have both run several different large companies over the years. And they said to me, you know, I open a plant or a office in San Francisco, or one of them had opened a company in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And he's like, you know, there's a little bit of applause. You know, you may make a few small headlines in a local paper. But then one of them opened a facility in eastern Kentucky in Appalachia, and one opened one in Memphis, Tennessee. And they were like, the people were so grateful. The governors were there. These parts of America want jobs. People want to work hard. And I just wish more CEOs from the coast would recognize that.
Well, Heather Long, economics correspondent for The Washington Post. We have links to her reporting at onpointradio.org. Thank you so much for being with us, Heather.
Thank you.
And Glenn Stevens, special projects director and reporter for WFMJ Television. He's covered the Lordstown Assembly Plant since 1971, with us today from Youngstown, Ohio. Glenn, it's been a great pleasure to have you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was a very good time and very informative.
Well, folks, I just want to end with a couple of comments here that we've received online. Paul Norton says, my brother is a machinist and must compete with China. They can produce a finished product for lower cost and he can acquire raw materials for it. You need protection for workers from foreign producers who lowball on wages and materials. John Roberts says, I've had to change careers several times, studying at night for years to learn new skills and earn new accreditation. Like evolution, it's adapt or die. Keep your comments coming at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.